Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. We're glad you're here, but just a heads up, if you're not into cursing, blasphemy, and laughing at fart jokes about Jesus, you may need to drop the device that you're listening to us on, your phone, your radio, your whatever, your laptop. Drop your laptop and walk away.
Drop your drink on your laptop.
Drop your drink on your laptop because we're that dangerous. We are that dangerous. So this is Church Drunk. We're Catholic. You don't have to be. We're glad you're here and along for the ride. I'm Guess, here with my co-hostess with the mostest, Dizzy.
Hey.
Diz, what are you drinking?
Today I am drinking in celebration of the upcoming Feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Just as
she would want me to. A delicious strawberry cocktail. And we haven't read a cocktail recipe for a while, so I thought, why not, dear listeners, treat you to another excerpt from the lovely book, Drinking with the Saints. So we always want to give credit to a good old Foley here.
Absolutely.
And apparently people in like old times would bless their fruits and herbs on this feast day. I couldn't read the whole reason why, but that's why we're drinking.
Well, it's because when Mary,
oh, she's so fruitful,
shot into heaven, she left behind,
it was like
sparkle
blessings. It was like instead of Lucky Charms on the rainbow of her, like fruits.
Like little blessing glitter coming down on your fruits.
Oh my gosh. My fruits feel so blessed right now. And I think everybody's should. And especially if you're drinking a strawberry cocktail. So, you know, if you have a fully stocked bar, as our dear guest does, you could whip up about 1.5 ounces of brandy with some strawberry juice, 1 ounce, or, you know, however much you can get out of a strawberry.
Right.
I mean,
is that like one strawberry's worth of juice?
Honestly, guys, you put whatever fucking juice you want. I have about the same amount of brandy and juice.
What if you have boysenberry juice?
Boysenberry is very summery. It goes fine. So some kind of juice, whatever. And 2 dashes orange bitters. Delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And then this garnishes with the strawberry. But once again, put some fucking fruit in your strawberry cocktail and you shake it 40 times because we always
shake things 40 times. It's a symbolic number.
And then you strain it into your cocktail glass and you say, thanks, Mary. You're awesome. Happy feast day.
I feel like Drinking with the Saints gave us like a good explanation of that.
They really do.
But like
try
to call it a strawberry cocktail, I mean, come up with something a little more, you know, Mary's Berry.
Well, now it is Mary's Berry.
Mary's Berry. Enjoy your Mary's Berry.
Yes,
at home.
Your strained blessed fruits.
Yeah.
Totally. So I'll be sipping this until I don't anymore and it's empty and I'll need something else. But I think if you're following along at home, you could make something for this day and count it as liturgical living. That would make you even better.
Let our mother bless your fruits.
Oh my gosh.
And
I can already tell, guys.
Then turn them into a cocktail.
Like the teats in the St. Patrick's Day. So many fruits.
No, we're never going
back to
that.
Mary has had many fruits. Oh, I'm going to talk about fruit.
Well, I was all set to honor Mother Mary with a Bloody
Mary.
Yes,
what are you drinking? Oh.
I was thinking, like, my first thought,
it's
Bloody
awfully,
Mary.
Unbloody.
And then I went to the liquor cabinet, as I often do, and I saw that the bottle of vodka, it's nice, but the bottle of Bombay Sapphire is basically like the Mother Mary of the liquor cabinet.
Oh my gosh, it is her shade of blue.
It's got this lovely shade of blue, and then, you know, a little bit of a darker blue cap. You know, sometimes you see the two-tone Mary.
Oh yeah.
And she was just, and there's actually, if you look closely, an image of the Queen staring at you, which is a little creepy.
Well, Mary's like Queen of Heaven.
Totally, yeah, no, like it makes sense with the Mary theme.
Yeah.
It's just this particular image of the Queen staring at you out of Bombay.
It's got her literal stamp of approval.
Yeah.
She'd be happy.
But, and on top of that, you know, like, in my opinion, there is just nothing more pure and comforting and satisfying than a classic gin and tonic.
It
so
is a classic.
I switched it up from a Bloody Mary to a Bombay and tonic in honor of the Mother Mary of the liquor cabinet,
and
Bombay
it's
Sapphire.
Doubly holy because we did talk a while ago about how tonic and quinine came from Jesuits. So if you've
came from, let's give credit where it's due, the indigenous people of Peru.
Right, so
who passed it off to the Jesuits.
Sure. But, you know, mass marketing. We'll give them a little credit.
Totally.
That's why we can call it Catholic.
Yeah. It's the Catholicest drink in the liquor cabinet.
Hear, hear. So, we're sipping and saluting to Mary today because just Mary a couple days, it is one of her many feast days.
Yes.
And, you know, Marian devotion is something that is uniquely Catholic.
Absolutely.
And we always have to kind of, like, explain to our non-Christian or our Protestant brethren why we revere and honor Mary, but yet we don't worship her, and yet there's a lot of Mary everything everywhere in Catholic churches.
If you're a Catholic with non-Catholic friends, as most of us should have, like, keep us balanced.
Yeah, what makes the friends?
Then it is something that you have to be ready to kind of, like, explain. Like, why do you worship Mary like a goddess, or how, what, you know, what's the whole Mary thing? Like, these are questions that, you know, like, you should be somewhat ready to answer, with anywhere between, like, I don't know, fuck off, to, you know, like, a longer answer. Because it can get pretty involved.
Yeah, and I think it's something that almost can be a defensive thing. Like, I've definitely seen it thrown kind of as, like, a derogatory thing at Catholics. Like, you worship, you know, saints, and especially Mary. And, you know, the internet is a deep, dark place, and there's stuff on there that's pretty horrible about her. And we want to emphasize kind of the good part in that, like, I do believe in honoring her and revering her. And, you know, I think as many problems, and we're going to enumerate them soon, dear listeners, that the church has with women, we do pretty well when it comes to honoring Mary as the mother of God, as Jesus' mother, and of, like, the mother of the church.
I do think it's something that helps to keep us balanced as a faith tradition that is generally very, like, male-centric, right?
Totally.
Jesus was a man. He refers to God as his father. Only men can be priests, and so on and so forth, right? Like, all the 12 apostles and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's a very sort of
And we paternal... can approach that kind of in a scholarly way where we're like, that was the culture at the time, which does also make Mary stand out.
And that's
also
the thing,
because of that culture.
To have Mary as, you know, someone that stands out in the faith tradition is something that we can, like, hang our hat on, you know, and feel like, okay, there is a place for that more maternal side of God. You know, like, there is something to be said
that God thought that was valuable for God's son to have a mother.
Right.
And that she is honored in the Gospels when not a lot of women are named by name. Like, Mary has a role.
Right.
In the Gospels.
And while she's not a goddess, she was a very influential figure, as far as we know, in the early church.
Yeah.
A powerful female leader in the formative years of our faith.
Yeah.
And
well, and things like this feast day that did come later in church teaching and some other things about Mary do kind of edge up to that sort of understanding of her. Like, we really tiptoe up to her being a goddess. I mean, we don't use that word, but we're giving her special designations that we don't give other humans.
For example?
Well, the Immaculate Conception.
Immaculate Conception.
That's kind of the first one that comes to mind.
Born without sin.
Yeah, right. That, you know, she didn't have to bear that mark of original sin because she was going to bear God's son. Here we go again.
Like, it's like
you can hear the skepticism in our voices, but it's not because we don't think that's great for her. It's just that I don't think that would have to be true for her story to be as important and powerful as it is.
It's like an onion horse nugget to me. Like, you can just keep peeling away layers and still find.
Why is it a horse nugget?
Horse shit.
Because, there it is.
Like, on the one hand, like, yes, it's lovely, isn't it, to be, like, conceived without sin and never have to bear that stain. But the fact that we think that that stain exists in the first place is an issue for me. Like, it's a symbolic thing.
You know what?
I
don't have an issue, actually, with original sin.
So when babies are born, you look at them and go, yep, looks like a sinner to me.
Well, in the sense, like, humans are fucked up creatures. Like,
okay.
Humans are awful. We are truly the worst.
I agree with the symbolism of
like,
it, but
I just think,
the...
like, you're born human, you're born flawed.
Yes.
I don't, you know, not on a personal or individual level.
But I don't think that babies come into the world being like, oh, I can't handle the weight of my original sin.
I think it just represents the general fallen state of humanity.
Yes.
And I mean, look at us.
Right.
There's not a lot of argument here.
No. Oh, yeah, no.
Like,
no.
You know, we are unredemed.
Right.
But until we are redeemed.
There's a level of, you know, how necessary is it to make Mary,
know, I don't think it matters.
That. Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, these certain church teachings are kind of the things that make people be like, wait, what? And also this one, the assumption Yes. I'm very, like, this one I have a particularly difficult time with.
Just a couple days. Sorry,
you know, I guess it would have been super cool to be there and see Mary's, like, dead or undead or whatever version of her you want to think about being assumed into heaven, like, floating upwards, as you see in, like, the kids' coloring, where she's, like, floating on a cloud. Yes. And she floats into the heavens, like... I don't think that matters in the story. I don't think that's what made her holy or important or a model for us or anything relevant to Jesus. Like, this is the 1950s, and they wanted to give her something extra special.
Glorify a little bit more, yeah.
I
agree. Well, and I, you know, we've documented my beef with the Ascension on the blog about, like, you know, Jesus lives the fullness of human life and then, P.S., floats to heaven on a cloud. And for Mary, you know, to give us that example of motherhood and you know, bringing Jesus into the world and raising Jesus and teaching Jesus important lessons and giving him that nudge at the wedding at Cana to be like
she's feisty.
I need some wine and you need to make a miracle happen and let's accelerate this process.
You ain't on your way just yet, mister. Right. Like,
and then at the end of her life, which was a very gritty, visceral human experience, and, you know, watching her son die and all those things, she floats to heaven on a cloud. And I just don't love that I have to use that tone of voice at the end of the lives of both Jesus and Mary.
Yeah, I don't, that's where we are with it.
So it's the Feast of the
Feast of the Assumption.
Assumption, for
drink
better or worse.
Drink a strawberry fizz.
Drink a strawberry cocktail.
Pour some
Mary's berries.
Yeah, Mary's berries. pour some Bombay down your throat, and then you'll probably understand everything, and including Mary's Assumption, better. But you know, with Mary, once again, like, in our modern sense, we have other things that are interesting and kind of supernatural about her.
Yes.
So, like, the apparitions of Mary, like, people have, like, big followings of Mary.
Right.
Or to Mary, of these places where she's appeared.
And these, I think, are actually kind of cool.
They're interesting.
And this is where my, like, personal bias comes in, because the Immaculate Conception, the Assumption of Mary, these are things that are at best sort of removed from the reality of most people who have ever lived on this planet, right? At worst, they're just kind of fiction to make us feel better or special.
Yeah, I did want to say with the Assumption, like, one other thing that I do like about it, even though I don't think it's factually true, and if you heard our other one about stories, like, in the story category, it was kind of putting her on the level of, like, Elijah.
Yeah.
And I do actually like that in terms of, like, honoring her.
Right. No, I think it's one of those things that sets her aside.
Like, we don't mean to rag on the whole thing.
She's special.
Yet,
it's okay to have doubts about the validity of, like, the actual story itself, right? The meaning behind it is that Mary was special. And there are, I mean...
And she was.
For the sake of full disclosure, you know, I mean, part of the stuff that, if there is any evidence to support a claim like Mary was assumed body and soul in heaven, there is no site to venerate the grave of Mary.
That's true, and there's a lot of other things.
We know where she lived out, or we think we know where she lived out her days in Ephesus, one of my favorite things to say, especially with a lisp. Ephesus. Mary was assumed in Ephesus.
Oh my gosh. I've never heard that before. but that's awesome.
But there is no, you know, like, a lot of times in those days, they would go and venerate. I've actually been underneath the Vatican, or no, it was a separate catacombs tour where they had... The bodies of Peter or Paul were there, and people had etched onto the rocks, you know, like, Peter is here.
Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of that for Mary. So
that's true.
You know, that's one of those things.
We have to leave room for mystery and miracles.
Yes. Sometimes we have to be skeptical of our skepticism.
We can go all the way around.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but in the modern sense, I got you back off of apparitions.
The apparitions thing is kind of cool because it has a real tangible impact on people's lives right now. And again, you can be skeptical of the source of the apparition, but the fact is that faithful people turn these into pilgrimage sites and they gather there, and it has an impact on their lives one way or another.
Yeah, so what we mean, apparitions are like places where Mary has appeared to people.
Yeah.
And some of those people have gone on to become saints.
Oftentimes children
or young people.
Yeah.
If you ever saw, like, the old movie, The Song of Bernadette, was actually kind of a famous movie about Saint Bernadette, who saw an apparition of Mary at Lourdes. And, you know, there's that well or spring.
And Lourdes, I've never been to Lourdes.
Me either.
But it has become this site where, you know, that you go to the grotto, you bring your, like, the walls are supposed to be lined with crutches of people who've been healed there.
Yep.
And, you know, you show up with extreme faith and...
And there's, like, procession maybe every day or something.
Yeah,
like,
and extreme things are said to have happened, you know?
Yeah, like, so I think I read, like, some thousands and thousands of people have claimed their healings from there, but the church has actually verified 69 or 70, which is a lot still.
Man, I hope it's 69.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is.
How awesome would it be if Mary was that's where we're going to stay.
Well, how about that? Keep trying to clean me up. I'll show you what's up, humanity.
Mary is actually Bill cackling. And Ted.
You know what?
69, dude.
If Mary is like cackling in heaven about her 69 miracles and Lourdes, I believe anything. Yeah. Like, it's fine.
So, but it's this place where people go and they lay bare their souls and they gather together and they sing songs and they have processions. And I do feel like, I haven't been to Lourdes. I did go to Medjugorje, not as a specific pilgrimage to there, but it was kind of, I was in the neighborhood, so to speak, of Bosnia-Herzegovina.
As you do.
But I had a chance to go there with my dad, actually, and we did the, there's a Stations of the Cross that goes all the way up the hillside to where the cross is placed, where the apparitions supposedly happen. And it was something, you know, like, it's a memory that I'll cherish with my dad.
Yeah.
It was something that was really cool to see the people who had come there from all over the world. And there is, there's just kind of a feeling in the air sometimes when you go to places like that.
Yeah.
And you have something in common with everybody there.
I was going to say, like, those prayers and those, you know, hopes and good intentions that people bring there, that's holy too. And I'm sure that also venerates the place. You know, like,
there is a sense of you know, the spirit being present and the kingdom being built and all of those things. And then sometimes you look at it from another perspective and you're like, But is it just like a house of cards, you know?
Right.
Like, is this just kids that got bored and were like, I saw Mary today, you know? And then the lie gets out of control.
Where were you guys all day? What were you up to? And they're like, well.
Mary in apparition.
Mary, you said it was fine.
Just go with it.
Yeah.
So, but it's a cultural
thing.
Well,
that's one that's not one of the verified ones.
It's not verified, yeah. That one is still under examination by the Vatican. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because the Vatican does, like, do a really thorough job with all these saint, like, and apparition investigations. Yeah. Like, they're really not trying to lead people astray if they can't verify it.
Right.
But at the same time, they do sort of allow and be like, hey, like, this is a cultural or local thing that people find a connection to the holy. We're not going to, like, knock it. We're just not going to endorse it.
And I do kind of like that.
I do.
They've
like
made
that
space for popular piety. Like, if the local people believe it and it is not leading them astray, then there's no need to squash it, you know? And I think that maybe we need a little more room for that sometimes. To be like,
I think we could use
if
that.
If it's making people feel happy and holy and giving glory to God, then let them run with it for a little while.
Then what does it matter?
Yeah. Totally. Like, certainly things have gotten out of control during, you know, at historical times with that type of popular piety. But if it makes you feel like you're better connected to God, then, you know.
It's a prayer practice. It's a devotion.
Ignatius, like, would certainly say that you're on the right track.
You can't knock people's devotions.
Yeah.
Except for when we do, because they're dumb.
Well, sometimes they're dumb.
Yeah.
And they have to be
knocked around a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Instructed.
I mean, as Mary would want us to do, I'm sure.
Mary, that was part
of Mary's
job.
She was calling people out all the time.
Part of Mary's job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mary, mother of Jesus, mother of God, queen of heaven, mother of the church. She's got all these like fancy full titles, and those are like some of the official ones, and then she's got all kind of other ones. I actually like that about Marian devotion.
Yeah.
That you can be like, Mary of the whatever near me. And like kind of dedicate it to her with this idea that she's like the mother of all.
It certainly is like a font of creativity, you know, which I think is appropriate in a way because Mary's job was to bring God into the world in a whole new way, right? And there's a very creative component to that. And so people kind of honor that tradition, I think, by saying, you know, like Mary is someone who speaks to me and gives me this inspiration to do this thing and like
and
there's a certain creative
element.
It
speaks to kind of the child in everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
Like when you are looking at yourself in your spiritual life or your prayer life, like part of you has to have like that childlike belief.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of nice to have the maternal figure of that, to be like, I can be like a little kid in prayer and look to Mary like a mother who's compassionate.
Yeah.
So I do like that tradition of the church. I think it has value for people.
I think so.
And for the church, I would hope too. Yeah.
Well, and she's an important figure in terms of, like we said, kind of keeping ourselves in balance spiritually, you know, yeah. Like if you get kind of like there's Old Testament God, you know, that's in charge of striking down sinners. And there's New Testament God, yeah. who has a kid and softens a little bit, right? Right. And Mary's a part of that equation as well in making God's presence in our world more relatable, more tangible, giving us a comforting presence at times. Well, and
coming through the most vulnerable of portals.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something maybe we should talk about a little bit. Like, we've kind of avoided, like, things that we don't really like about Marian devotion yeah. in the church. Yeah. But I think something I do like is her cultural context.
Yeah.
You know, here we have a young, very young, first century woman right. in Palestine. Like, that's about as vulnerable as you get.
Yeah. I mean,
and
like...
So there's power in this vulnerability, which is really how we see Jesus, too. Yeah. You know, we're the only religion who's, as Richard Rohr says, worshiping a wounded, dying person.
Yeah.
You know, like, the entrance is this vulnerable place.
And the historical person of Mary is a fascinating character, you know? Like, yeah. when you think about the situation that she found herself in with Joseph and all that kind of
totally.
Stuff.
Totally.
The cultural context at the time, and she could have been killed
yeah,
for totally saying yes to God's plan, and she did it anyway.
And let's just give a shout out to early gospel writers for including consent in
yes.
The conception of Jesus. Like,
yes.
way to go.
Right.
Guys, like, she had to, like, we always think it'd be Dylan Mary said yes, but like, really, like, she said yes. Like,
yeah.
that's part of the story. They didn't include stuff that they didn't necessarily have, like, they didn't have to include that.
Yeah. And it is a big part of the story, the fact that
big part.
She said, like, I will be the handmaiden of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is going to completely change my course, but here we go.
Right.
You know, and I think that's something that we strive for today, to have that same yes in our lives.
Right.
To God's plan, not to,
right.
like, everything.
And that, for her, it doesn't necessarily bring peace or, mm-hmm. You know,
there's some hardship,
like everything's not tied up pretty at the end, as
yeah.
you said, you know, he
yeah.
dies and she has to live with that.
Yeah.
But yet there's peace in her bravery and
right.
kind of winning peace for all of us. So it's a powerful, powerful story.
So I think, you know, take things like Immaculate Conception and Assumption, at least for us, with kind of a grain of salt. But like, as with all things, look to why it has been honored for so long and figure
yeah.
out, you know, who is this person of Mary and why are there so many different feast days for her. Why are there
yeah.
so many different ways to set her aside as a human that stands aside from other humans?
Right.
You know, like,
and it's, you know, let me start getting into like the difficult stuff, because just like I don't like the overly sanitized and cleaned up precious, precious Jesus.
Right.
I don't like that we super sanitize and like bleach white Mary. Like, that wasn't.
You don't think she was a perpetual virgin?
I knew you were going to get to this
You
one.
Don't think that?
You know what? I think her fruit was shared with who it was supposed to be shared with. Like, I think Mary and Joseph were a regular fucking Jewish couple, and I think they had a bunch of kids after Jesus, and I'm sure they did it.
So you think that when the Gospels refer to the siblings of Jesus, that
they're not
actually talking about
they're
the siblings
not
of Jesus?
Using like an antiquated word for cousins. Yeah, I don't think that, and I'm sorry. Like,
there
you
is.
Can blame my fucking liberal Jesuit education who let a Presbyterian teach me New Testament theology, and yet here we are.
There's a letter to the Vatican involved in this episode.
Send
of
me
Church
hate
Shrunk.
Mail. Send me hate mail. It's fine. You know, because I don't
letter
want
from the Vatican.
Oh my gosh, Pope Francis! If you tell me I have to believe it, I might think about it, but I just don't think it matters to the story.
Yeah.
I do believe in Jesus's conception, the way the story
yes.
tells us. Like, I leave room in my belief for miracles, but I don't understand what would be the point of that. And maybe it's beyond my understanding, but I don't think the evidence points to that.
Well, I think that it's one. I think you put it well. You have to leave room for the miraculous, right? And it's
yeah.
something that people have grappled with, and theologians have grappled with throughout the centuries of. Is it important that this was a virgin birth? Is
yeah.
it possible? Is it important? Is it whatever? Now, the sciencey side of me says that virgin birth actually does happen in nature. That it will be
like the certain like under the sea creatures who just like spontaneously spawn.
Like some fishes can.
Are you calling Mary birth. The starfish of the sea?
Yes, I am. Oh. Yes, I am.
Mind blown.
I am now.
Okay.
The chicken of the sea.
No.
Oh, okay. Chickens don't actually.
I think seahorses. Aren't the seahorse the ones like the boys take care of the babies?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's also another story.
It's different than actual spontaneous. Anyway, so that's
somebody. Okay.
That's a deep David Attenborough episode for future. So the biological side of me says, okay, well, like, it's not that insane, like, but it's also that insane. And then the theological side says, but you do have to leave that door open to the miraculous. If you're going to believe the rest of the Jesus story, you got to leave the door open.
We're believing
at the
other
beginning.
Crazy things.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like your scientific side, well, my like, you know, what we're talking about myths and stories and cultures across the world, a virgin birth is a pretty standard, hero narrative.
Also
that's
true.
That's how we get some of our, you know, demigods in the different cultures and how we get, some of the great heroes is a virgin birth. So part of me says, well, you know, this is how they would frame that story to indicate right from the get-go, this guy is special.
Yeah.
And maybe back to that once again, it doesn't matter. I would argue against myself, devil's advocating, that Jesus is very different than even any of those other heroes. His story is very different.
Yeah.
So, you know,
he rejects
once again,
the classic narrative. But it starts
for the miracle.
From a place of miraculousness.
Yes.
Which is not the worst thing in the world sometimes.
I think we need hope.
Yeah.
For miraculousness.
So,
all right. So, I don't know where we came down on that. We like Mary.
We like Mary.
We don't always like people's treatment of Mary.
No. I think, but, you know, Mary's one of those characters where you can draw your own lines, right? And
I think, like any of the saints, you can talk to Mary and have your own experience of who she might or may be.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that we thought would be fun to kind of wrap things up here was, you know, part of what we like to do, as evidenced by the last episode about myths and legends and stuff, is take things that are ancient and put them into a modern context in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we thought about if there were a modern-day Mary.
Yes.
And if there were a modern-day anti-Mary, who would those people be? And we both went to our respective thinky corners and have come up with our examples.
Yeah, and so for me, I went one sincere and one kind of crazy, which I guess is the premise of this exercise anyway.
Okay. You want to go? Are we going to start modern Marys?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so do you want me to start?
Go for it. Lay it on me.
So this was the one that I went kind of sincere with. And I tried to just think about, like, it's kind of hard to put exactly because, once again, like we said, she's super unique.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, like, young, brave, Middle Eastern, in charge of her own life. And I actually wanted to highlight, like, somebody we've all heard her name, but Malala Yousafzai, who's...
Thought you were going to say Malala.
Yeah. Just because it's such a powerful global story.
Mm-hmm.
And her father's involved kind of in the way that Joseph was. Like, he was going to advocate for her and, like, let her have her education. And even in the midst of this culture that was really not supportive of that. And they suffer a lot for it.
Totally.
So I saw a lot of parallels between her.
Very cool.
And I think if Mary was born today, she'd have much more of a microphone than she did in the first century.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I went a different route.
Okay. Is it Lady Gaga?
No, it's not Lady Gaga. Not Lady Gaga. I honestly just went with, like, first things to come to mind. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of dove into, like, why those would be the things that come to mind. You know, you went Middle Eastern. I went white lady on the wall at church.
Okay.
And actually, the first person that came to mind was Princess Diana.
Oh, wow. And that's kind of a timely as well.
Yeah, right. Kind of. And it could just be that she's been on the mind. But, like, you know, when you think about someone who kind of had a situation thrust upon her that she wasn't necessarily excited about or complicit with 100% or was maybe at least a little bit hesitant to, you know, like, and it brought her very much into the public sphere. And you know, Princess Di, she had her faults, but in the end, and
she was not actually a perpetual virgin.
Not a perpetual virgin.
Nope.
Yeah. There's a big divergence.
Nobody kept that. But that's okay.
But I think she is somebody who's actually picked up some momentum after death, as opposed to, you know,
well,
like Mary's become a much bigger deal as her earthly life ended in assumption or whatever it ended in.
Oh my gosh.
And Diana's the same way, you know, like once she passed away, the image of Diana became a large global phenomenon.
Well, you really hit the maternal vibe with her.
Yeah.
Like, and she was very compassionate and giving to everybody. So I get that. And I kind of like mine was like Mary before Jesus was conceived.
Yes, kind of.
And maybe
yeah.
you were like yeah. after.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good pick. Let's do a...
And our anti-Mary. So a modern day
anti-Mary.
Do you want to
say ours at the same time?
Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, wait.
Okay.
So I was thinking, as you know, I read my, like, adjectives for real Mary or, like, maybe modern Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And so my adjectives for the antithesis of Mary would be, like, old, backwards, repressed, maybe under the thumb of cultural institutions. Stupid. I don't know.
Okay.
Just like not.
I didn't pick mine for like any of those reasons.
Okay.
So,
but what were your reasons?
I thought it in terms of like Mary was someone who is a sympathetic figure and you want to root for her and she had success. So I thought about someone who you would root for who didn't necessarily come through in the way that you wanted.
Oh, you're
so somebody who
much
rather
than
me. Saying yes,
guys,
right? Rather than being like yes to God. You actually are fighting against, like, a life of kind of
I may have went more, like, anti-Christ, anti-Mary, you know?
Okay, okay.
I think that, listeners, this is a good insight to how Guess is actually nicer than I
not
am.
Not always. Well,
okay.
You did drive a stake through someone's head in our last episode. But...
Yael did, and she is an ancient Hebrew hero, so...
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, you right through
so,
Cicero's temple. Okay.
Count of three. One, two... Three.
Sarah
Amy Winehouse.
Oh my gosh.
Sarah Palin.
She's like the anti-Mary, is she not?
She totally is.
She's
That's
like,
awesome.
She's like, oh, I'm empowered, yet I'm fucking stupid.
You know what?
Oh my gosh.
I did, after my first thought, Amy Winehouse.
Amy Winehouse is so sympathetic. That's a sad story,
It
dude.
Is a sad story. Somebody who you want to succeed, who
yeah,
you want to root
a
for.
A beautiful person.
And then I thought about her
She's
song.
She's
like
Mary gone wrong.
Trying to make me go to rehab, but I said no.
And we're like,
no.
you like, should have, Amy.
There's nothing
Why
more opposite than
go?
Yes than no.
Yeah.
I did, however, in defense of... No, not in defense of Sarah Palin. In defense of your idea
Careful.
Of Sarah Palin being the anti-Mary, I flitted right across Ann Coulter at one point.
She
and
was
I
the
was
one
like,
I
oh
was
my
on
gosh.
My list.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay,
so
Ann
maybe
Coulter
that's
was
maybe
actually,
that's the one that we agree on.
She was actually my go-to, and then when I read back through my things, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if Ann Coulter even pretends to believe in God.
Yeah.
So that's why Sarah Palin went over Ann Coulter.
So maybe that's it.
Gosh.
Maybe that's where we end up.
You know what?
That your anti-Mary is either Amy Winehouse... Sarah Palin, or most likely, Ann Coulter.
Maybe Ann Coulter and Sarah Palin are, like, secretly the same evil person.
They just put on a wig.
put anyway, on a wig. Guys.
Go into his phone booth, take off your wig, put on some glasses, and come back out.
Okay. Right? So, you know, if you have your own ideas about who would be a modern Mary, or whether you like Mary, or whether you think Catholics are... goddess worshiping pagans, you can write to us and tell us why at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Yep.
We are on the Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
And you should subscribe to us
subscribe.
So you don't miss one of these gems of episodes.
Shoot us a review if you
Yeah, we
feel
like
generous.
Ratings and reviews. That'd
or
be
if
great.
You hate us. But
send us to a friend. You know, we're doing this. We hope that our two listeners grow.
Yeah. Tweet us at churchdrunkpod.
Yep. Guess we'll
and,
see your tweet.
Yeah.
So
we're glad you're along for the ride.
We hope you join us next time at Church Drunk, where we are raising Bloody Marys to Holy Marys and sorting through our mommy issues together.
Amen.
Bye.
No, that didn't really clink.